AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
Welcome to season two of In Conversation with Ashwin. And this is a special episode because I have my beautiful wife, Ashna Lulla, as a guest, along with Vignesh Shivkumar, who is a really cool guy. Both of them are architects. Both of them have created this visual masterpiece in With Love Madras, a book that's genuinely one of the best things I've seen. Ashna Lulla is the writer, and Vignesh Shivkumar was responsible for all things visual. And I have tremendous respect for both of them for having spent all of their effort in fine-tuning the beautiful narrative that this book has shaped up to have. With Love Madras is a collection of 20 unique stories in the city of Madras, and each home has its depth, culture, food, and a lot of inspiration. That's the right word. This book is a lot of inspiration for me because I've seen so much of their hard work day in and day out bear the fruit that it has today. The book is ready to order on www.withlovemadras.com. So without further ado, presenting to you the two creators of With Love Madras, Ashna Lulla and Vignesh Shivkumar.
Welcome to the show, everybody. This is In Conversation with Ashwin, and we're re-emerging after a long time. It's been a privilege. It's been a pleasure to see Vignesh and Ashna bring this to life from just an idea on a paper. Welcome to the show, guys. It's so good to have you here.
Thank you, Ashwin, for having us over. It's one of the first interviews, I think, that we are doing for the book, and we are all excited to do this.
Let's get into it, right? So this is the first question I start most of my interviews with, and I'd love to know a little about your early childhood and how that has influenced the person you've become and are becoming.
I grew up in the Gulf predominantly for my childhood. I was born in Madras, though, and I lived here briefly for a couple of years till I was 3 or 4 years old. And then we moved to Qatar, and most of my childhood was over there. It was very different from an Indian upbringing, of course. There was an Indian community and all of that, but not exactly the same as here. What I would say influenced my personality and character development, if I could say that, during my childhood was I wasn't a very serious person. Studying and the academics part of it was always like a mandatory thing that which I saw which had to be done. But I would always love my playtime, hanging out with friends, playing in the streets. That is something which I really realize has affected the way that I see work also. I like when my days are chaotic and unexpected. So I feel that was something that grew through my childhood, where I liked the freedom and opportunities that I could venture out to on my own without any restrictions. My parents have been supportive throughout my life, actually. Regardless of the kind of choices that I've always wanted to make, they've been supportive of it. That's briefly about my childhood. And in terms of career choice, I think I was curious about drawings and technical sides of construction during my high school days. When I had to choose between computer science and another subject called engineering drawing, my dad gave me a brief essence of the subject. I really got curious about it and chose engineering drawing for my 11th and 12th. Because of that subject only, I realized that I was slightly inclined towards civil or architecture. I decided architecture is more creative and it possibly would have more interesting opportunities than civil. So that's how I got into architecture. And slowly I've gravitated towards photography, which was also an interest, I mean, a vital part during my childhood. My father used to own a DSLR. He used to be a hobbyist photographer. So he used to take event photographs of whatever functions were happening.
Oh, that's on the family.
Yeah, exactly. In fact, my mom told that my grandfather, my dad's dad, he used to be interested in photography as well. So she said that it is something definitely that you've gotten through your bloodline.
That is so cool. You picked up the camera at what age?
I would say around when I was in the fourth or fifth grade. The first time that I really did something seriously about photography was when we had a school competition. And it was about sustainable living or something along those lines. So I approached it in a very different way because I didn't know how to portray it, but I just opened up a tap, took a photo of the tap being running without someone using it.
How lazy and smart.
Exactly. And went, took photos of a bunch of garbage lying around. So it was like a very simple and a lazy way of going about this. And I don't know if I was really good or something, but I came second for that competition. And I really got motivated by that. My dad also took me a little seriously after that. And he entrusted me with a DSLR. Photos were taken with a film camera, actually. And I didn't know about how film works. So in between, when I was taking a lot of the photographs, I opened to check if it was functioning properly. And I ended up burning a lot of the images. Yeah.
Well, we got to start somewhere.
Initial photography was all about like nature, like flowers, butterflies and bees and birds that used to be there in our neighborhood. My school friends really started encouraging me when I started posting them on Facebook and stuff. And yeah, that kind of persisted and I ended up taking this up as a career at some point.
We have a lot of special moments through your photography as well. So lots to thank you beyond just this beautiful piece you're creating. Okay, when was the idea of this book planted?
Back in 2020, June 2020 to be precise, when the pandemic was a few months in, everyone was working from home. And for me, the firm that I was working at, was a lot of the projects were on standstill because of the pandemic. So I had a ton of free time. A friend of mine had to photograph a space that she had recently completed. So I got Vignesh on board because he was segueing into architectural photography at the time, and I styled the whole space. So it was just Vignesh and I, and both of us had no idea who the clients were. We didn't know anything about the project, but as the day progressed, we learned so much about the house, and we saw so much of their story in the objects that they collected, in the art that was displayed in their home, in the furniture, in the way the space was styled, in the activities that they did. I've always been on one end of building a home where I'm given a client brief, and then as an architect, we craft a space and we give mood boards and all of that. But I've never really been on the other side where I've actually seen a client live in the space, because you hand over a project and then you leave. And it was really nice because the project had been lived in for a couple months. It was really interesting to see how the end user was actually using the space and seeing so much of them in the space. And that got me thinking, even when we look at homes or we consume any kind of home content on magazines or anything for that matter, we really don't get the stories. Homes are portraits of the people living in the space, and it should really be from that perspective. Vignesh and I left the apartment around 6 o'clock, and we were walking down the road, and both of us felt really good because we had spent like a very wholesome day, not only like shooting and styling things that we both love doing, but walking away from that home, learning about some people and getting a new story. I'd never read stories the way I'd experienced this house. And I also felt that Madras as a city wasn't, you know, represented in the design space. It wasn't really given a seat at the table. This was just one home in the city. There'd be so many more. And what if we just embarked on this journey of discovering homes in the city and documenting it the way we just had on that day? And that kind of sparked the idea of like With Love Madras.
What do you mean by giving Chennai a seat on the table in the design space?
A lot of design magazines like Architectural Digest and Elle Decor, a lot of them feature projects from Delhi, Mumbai, Pune, and even Bangalore these days. A lot of projects are featured. But projects from Chennai or other parts of Tamil Nadu are like very rare. So to discover something about our city, Even if you wanted to know about different homes of Madras, like how the styles evolved and all, there aren't any books or any specific documentations that we could immediately look up, even during our college days. So we felt that Madras, because of the conservative mindset that people think we have, we are not very extravagant in our ways of spending or designing. So we wanted to break that image.
How long did it take you to write the entire book?
The first home that we documented was in August 2020, and we wrapped up 20 homes by, I think, April or May of 2021, if I'm not mistaken. But the writing itself was a very tumultuous process, because I started writing, but then I realized a few months in, sometime in November, December, that, hey, I'm not a writer. I haven't studied journalism or creative writing. And if I want to write this differently and I want to really convey the essence of the time that we spent at these homes, I need to do it right. Then we embarked on a journey of finding someone who could mentor us on the project. We found someone from Madras, is a professor in the US, and she was okay to come on board. But midway through the project, she dropped out and she cited mental health reasons. So then again, it was another process of finding another person. I wanted to do a couple writing workshops to explore my own writing style and also to develop a voice for the book. And then I wanted to find an editor or a mentor who could brainstorm with me, someone who could push me to think and develop new angles for each story. So each story read differently. And I wanted that person to also be from Chennai, because I just felt like the storytelling would be so much more authentic, because they would understand where I was coming from. Life has a way of working out, and we did actually find someone else. Her name is Renuka Vasu. So she actually studied creative writing at SCAD in Atlanta and works in LA. And she was also in Chennai for the period I started writing, which was, say, April to May in 2021. I wrapped up the writing only in April or May the following year, which is 2022. We did take a break in between because, well, Ashwin, you and I got married. The writing process, with multiple back and forths, creating a pitch to send to publishers, creating social media strategies, there was a lot of writing. It wasn't just the book. So I think it took over a year, even though we started the project 2 years ago. We developed many iterations of the book. Vignesh will agree, we at least did, I don't know, 50 different layout strategies. We would obsessively go to bookstores, look for books. We raided people's homes, people who had these kind of books. We were like looking at fonts, leading, spacing, because we were doing it for the first time and we were doing everything in-house. It's hard to exactly pinpoint how much each part of the book took.
Looks like you've written more now than you've been in your entire life. Vignesh, what were your learnings from, you know, Ashna gave us the writing piece, the mentoring, the design layout. What was your journey in the photography lens? How did you look at this?
I thought I knew a fair bit of architectural photography because I had done quite a few projects by then. But I did not realize how much more I had to learn through the process. Thankfully, Ashna said that we need to reach out to different people experienced in the field and ask for their opinion and feedback of the works that we've done. Through that push, I reached out to a couple of photographers, thinking that they are really high people and they wouldn't give us time. But very surprisingly, two really great people responded to the mail and got on a video call with us. I shared the photos with them and they taught me how the photographs could be improved through in terms of editing and in terms of the way they were shot as well. The way I started shooting itself started improving through the homes. I used to typically finish editing the images within a couple of days after the shoot because it's easier for me. Writing, which requires a lot of time and assimilation work before the main piece comes out itself. But I thought I had completed my end of the work shortly after the shoots were done. But I did not anticipate the level of complexity that photographs will have when it goes for print. when we did the initial test prints on loose sheets, the photographs were like varying in so many different aspects in terms of the color, the brightness. And I didn't know how to go about rectifying all of this. It involved a lot of discussions with printers, with the photographers, and an extensive amount of time researching on the internet how to manage the for a camera to printer workflow. I think that was the most difficult and challenging from my end of the work. When we got out the first draft copy of the book, which was around, I think, Feb or March of 2022, I was quite excited because I thought the copy had come out in a reasonable shape. And I went and showed it to Ashna, and she was like so disappointed. And I did not anticipate that reaction from her at all.
Do you have a video?
Yeah, I did. But the video did not go as I had anticipated. She was like, this does not feel like a coffee table book. Okay. It's so thin.
Okay, I wanna get into that. So actually, what was the hardest part about the book for the two of you, like individually, Ashna, in your writing journey, Vignesh, in your photography journey? I know we kind of got a flavor of that, but what was the hardest part?
Hands down, the hardest was the persistence. Both of us, I think, got into thinking that we'll be done and dusted with this year or year and a half. I think at least the shape of the book, not even the sales aspect of it. But we did not think that taking the book itself to the perfect stage that we wanted, it would take 2 years. Managing our personal careers and lives and keeping the book project alive throughout all of that, it took a lot out of me personally to keep that persistence up on the same level throughout that time.
Ashna?
My answer is pretty much the same. I feel like the hardest part for me was beating the resistance and the imposter syndrome we felt while making the book. So we never had a business plan, clear timelines, for that matter, even a clear path to get from the idea to the product. And 2 years is a frightfully long time, but also in the book world, it's fairly normal. And another thing that we both did is we quit our jobs. I think I quit my job in 2021 to give this book the dream of, you know, seeing it to life for real shot. It required so much, right? It was not just the writing, photography, and putting it together in the layouts. It was like a comprehensive social media plan, reaching out to the right people, marketing it, creating a website. There was just so much involved. And we realized that we needed more time. It couldn't just be a side project. It had to be an essential part of our lives. We did have dips in our productivity, and more from my end, actually. I wasn't particularly good at taking negative criticism. And I think when the first version of the book came out, we did get a lot of like feedback. I remember, especially during the layouts with, you know, how the book was reading. You have to realize that we spent a year obsessing over all the books that we could get our hands on. So when you've seen so much good content, you know, you're not able to translate all of what you've shot and written and to make it visually look that pleasing. Then for me, at least, I was really hard on myself because I was just like, no, we have to obsessively get there. And Vignesh was very balanced on the other hand, because he really knows how to pause and celebrate how far we've come. And there were also a lot of harsh truths that we faced along the way. You know, like a lot of writers and photographers said that our product was great. And for that matter, even one or two publishers did. But our book never really got picked by a publisher because we were first-time authors. This was like a very niche topic because we were talking about Madras. COVID happened for like 2 years and there were a lot of books, you know, were in backlog. So even if our book had to go via publishing, it would see the light of the day, like say 3, 4, 5 years down the line. We would have to pump in money because we were not famous. So these were things that we didn't know, and we embarked on our journey. It was really hard. Remember the early mentors that I had on this journey? She told me that, you know, your energy is so infectious. And she was like, you're going to have many hard days on this project. And you just have to remember how you're feeling at this moment and try to bring yourself to that state of feeling that feeling to push through, because it is really hard. I think our efforts were really honest. We put in a lot of good intention and energy while making the product. And I hope that the passion hopefully reflects when a reader, like, you know, reads the content or flips through the photographs. For me personally, it was convincing myself before convincing the entire world that I'd made something really special.
Yeah, so, I think to add to that particular aspect of it, both of us are like perfectionists in our own ways. We wanted the product to be as perfect as possible, and we didn't stop at any point or compromise at any point. We wanted it to be like as premium as a product as possible in terms of visual feel and hold. And at that point, we didn't actually want to relent that control by going to a publisher, because we knew that through conversations with other people in the industry that if we went with a publisher, they would review the whole thing from scratch, and they will definitely have their inputs and opinions on the design, the layouts and fonts and everything. And from my end, I was extremely hesitant about that, because we had spent so much of time and effort in refining all of this, and we didn't want to give this as a finished product which is going to be shaped into something else that we hadn't imagined. So we decided to take that risk as well and go ahead and self-publish this ourselves so that we can see it through the way we had envisioned it.
Yeah. No, I love it. And, you know, this is reminding me of a boring parallel in the corporate world, which is bootstrapping versus going getting funded by a VC or a private equity firm to run your business, or
right,
have more control when you're funding it yourself.
And
honestly, you're self-publishing this one and you retained all the rights to the revenue as well as control of how the marketing, the sales. Obviously, that's
exactly
so much more work. My next question is house hunting, content and video production, finance, marketing, sales. What was your favorite part of the book journey?
So I think I loved our time spent in the homes. Nothing comes close to that, because the process of making this book not only made me meet 20 families, we got to see their most private spaces. We got to ask them really deep questions, really understand the philosophy of why they do what they do, how that translates into their home and their lives. Another parameter that we subconsciously ended up doing is that we chose people who really love their homes. There are people who have a lot of money and they build fancy, luxurious homes. There are people who don't care too much and they live in normalish homes. But we were drawn to people who really, really loved their homes. And that came through in their conversations and just the way their spaces were. I always left every home and every interview feeling like I'd gotten like some kind of life lesson. Like, you know, I had like nuggets of life lesson. While a lot of people may look at a product and say that this is a coffee table book, is actually a bedside table book. And let me explain why. Because when you're going to bed, you always keep something that uplifts you on your bedside. Every story has not only taught me about their space from an architecture design, that's a given and that's an obvious, but it's also taught me just about the kind of people they were, what hardships they overcame, what their mindset was. They were very subtle takeaways, and that was my favorite part of making this book. The process of making this book always left me hungry and curious. Like meeting like 20 different homeowners who I didn't know at all before I actually met them, it made me very curious to randomly reach out to writers whose work I admired, or photographers in Vignesh's case, or designers, or really anybody remotely fascinating on the internet. I would just reach out, and 95% of the time I got a response. I could even like squeeze in like a call or a video call. And it made me realize that the world is a very kind place. You just need to have strong intentions and a very authentic story. And you never know what and where these conversations can lead you. So, yeah, I just feel like I had my own story in the process of, like, you know, documenting the stories to create this book.
Yeah, I think even I would have to agree with Ashna. The shooting the homes and talking to the homeowners was hands down the best experience that we've had. We didn't know any of them, and we did not anticipate the level of warmth that they showed us during the pandemic. So we were expecting a lot of resistance entering the homes, and a lot of, you know, you can't ask me these questions, you can't shoot these spaces, because it's a lot of private stuff that we were asking and expecting from the homeowners. Like, what is the favorite corner of your home? What is the most private activity that you enjoy doing in your favorite space? So these are some things that really made us bond, us and the homeowners bond together on a very short span of time during the interviews. By the end of the interview, like Ashna said, we had a different takeaway from different homeowners and their life experiences and the way they lead lives. It was in a different sense, philosophical as well for us, the experience in different homes.
You have 20 homes in your book. Give me a lens into how a house was scoped, shot, interviewed, and written about.
I can't answer that with one home because it wasn't like a streamlined process that we followed through for the first and the last home. So it kind of evolved, just like the idea, the process also evolved through the journey. Initially, the first home that we went to shoot was Ashna's childhood friend's home, Indra, who has been extremely supportive of us through the book and has helped us with the writing and layouts and everything else. Before the shoot, we came up with like a checklist for the three of us. Ashna had a certain checklist. I had a certain checklist of what we respectively had to do. So we went with a very systematic and a methodical approach. And it didn't work as well as we had thought. So we were all over the place once the interview started. I was all over the place in terms of what I had to shoot first and what later. Then we slowly started realizing that the interview process also depends on how well we know the homeowners. Gradually we started taking it in a more freer approach. We started trying to get recce visits if we didn't know the homeowners at all. If possible, we try to visit in person. If not, we try to ask them to send us a few photos or videos of the home. We'll try to get a phone conversation with them. So based on that, Ashna started evolving the interview so that it's more personalized to their story. And the photo shoot also, I started planning it out so that based on the day and based on the house location, the lighting conditions and all affected the way the images were coming out. And also, the homeowners were not available at the time that we would ideally want to shoot the house. That was also an interesting challenge. So we started figuring out what the best approach would be based on that particular house and the timing that the homeowner would give us. Down the line, we would already know the homeowners a little bit. So Ashna would have a set of personalized questions for their story. And I'd know which spaces I had to prioritize for the shoots because certain spaces would be like extremely interesting and certain spaces would be a little mundane. So I would prioritize the interesting spaces first. We would typically go to the homeowner, we'll chat with them a little bit. If both of us had time, we would sit down and do the interview together. If not, Ashna would go ahead with the interview. And if that wouldn't affect my shoot process, I would go around to the other spaces and start taking pictures. Try to join back for the interview at some point. Or if the interview gets over, they'll come around, have a look at how I'm shooting the spaces. And it would be pretty free, actually. It wasn't like a very rigid workflow that we had.
Ashna, I know you had a real process to your writing and recording and then going home and listening to the transcript and making notes and then taking this to your Google Sheets and then writing that doc up and sending it to friends and family for edits and then rewriting that entire thing to a point where you felt comfortable. Give us a little into that and what that taught you.
Like Vignesh said, what I just came up with, you know, a roster of like, say, 30 questions. And for the first two or three homes, I would just go in order and I would say, yes, tick, 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 tick. And I would record the entire conversation. I would come transcribe it. And then I would write the essay. What I realized was that the essays were starting to look a little similar, right? Because three to four homes down, I hadn't really improved or iterated my process. And that's when it struck me that my essays, my stories, and my information is going to be the same. There are only going to be minor detail shifts if my questions are the same. So if I wanted to understand a home better, if I want to present its authentic story, I would have to recce the home. I would have to go meet the homeowners or at least have a conversation over, you know, the phone and, you know, talk to them, try to understand and get aspects of their life which weren't directly connected to the home. Because sometimes someone's career, someone's passion, where they originally are from and how they moved to Madras, different questions drew me to different paths, helped position my story differently and get different angles. That process of, you know, the recce and an earlier conversation helped me really like mull over the home and then create like some free-flowing questions. I didn't make it very formal. I started conversing with them getting them to be a little more comfortable before I jumped into the questions. That really helped me. And also when Renuka came on board, Renuka was our editor, by the way, she would sometimes see the same transcript and the same content a little differently. And then she would tell me to go back and ask, you know, more questions so that I could write the article a lot better. I wasn't very confident about my work because, like I said, I haven't studied writing, but I knew that I wanted to do, you know, design content and architecture writing. And I wanted it to be damn good. So I would reach out obsessively to anyone who read a lot, who had, you know, who wrote well, and whether it was you, Ashwin, or Indra, for that matter, because she like read 82 books in the pandemic, and, you know, anyone who was creative, like I would get their inputs, because what I realized in the process is that I may have reached out to hundreds of people and they may just have given me like one piece of useful advice. But I was like that each input I just got like, you know, 1%, 1%, 1% better. And I feel like that does reflect in the writing. Like when I compare the first essay I wrote to the 10th, 12th version of the essay and where it is at now, I can actually see the growth curve. And then I just got better at, you know, framing questions and forming an angle before I met the homeowners and interviewed them. So like 20 houses later, like I'd gotten like a, you know, I'd gotten the hang of doing it authentically and doing it to get a real story.
Yeah, I think I can definitely attest to the fact that the transformation of Ashna's writing was dramatic during this journey of our book. And Ashna, I think she got a hang of how to articulate the facts in as interesting stories in a different form rather than just overemphasizing the romantic aspect of it. Each home, she started seeing what the spine of the story of the homeowner was and identifying that and weaving the rest of the details around that spine.
That note, the last question, actually there's two more. So the first one is your favorite house and why, and the last one is, you know, maybe one of you can take each, and what's the top advice you want to give anyone who wants to get a book out there? I know that this whole episode can be a piece of advice, but your favorite house and why, go with that first.
I think both our answers will be the same.
I feel like it's very wrong for us to pick a favorite house, but we both will agree La Casa Roja was the best house in the book. And our book actually starts with La Casa Roja because we were like, we shouldn't save the best for the last. We should just start with a bang. La Casa Roja, I think, was also the house we coincidentally spent the most time in. We shot for 2 days. I mean, we could have wrapped the shoot up in one day, but both of us loved the space so much. I think we wanted for it to last for 2 whole days. Why I love La Casa Roja is because it made me realize what kind of a powerful impact a space can have on you. It's a house that's, you know, sustainably built. There was a lot of energy, a lot of intention that the homeowners had while building the home. They fully got into the process. They went to brick factories. They built a small shed on the site where they actually lived on site while their house was taking shape. They were explaining how they were on the lookout for a plot of land to build their first home. They didn't just buy any plot of land. There was a lot of intention. You know, they were driving past and they saw like a little hole in the wall. And then they, you know, peeped in and they found like this mango orchard. And the orchard spoke to them. You know, it was not a linear process where they brought the land, they hired an architect, and they built a house. They bought the land. They spent 2 years visiting the land every weekend. They had like a makeshift shed that they just spent extensive times in. Their kids had their birthday parties there. People were just, you know, running around, playing around in the orchard. And they realized that this house cannot take away from the orchard. It should only add to it. So even when you're in the space and when you look at photographs from the book, it feels like the house is sprouted out from the land. And then there's this whole, you know, tropical lush landscape encapsulating it. And it's made with, it wasn't sustainable from a very technical standpoint. They had a large well, they positioned, they like, you know, had solar panels, the kind of materials that they use. It all was rooted in the way that they grew up, because both of them grew up in Kerala. So it made sense that, you know, they wanted to grow up, and they grew up around plantations. So the kind of planting that they did, the kind of materials that they used, they really put every inch of them into that space, and it really reflects. Like, even in the interiors, way it was done, like the kind of antiques that they had, it was a house that was filled with everything that is Mitch and Ranjit and their family. Anyone who goes into that space, anyone who gets to visit the space, the energy is palpable. You feel so different. I'm a very anxious person, and at the time, like just before we were shooting the home, I was so anxious. But those 2 days that I went there, I could actually pause. I completely forgot everything, and I was in the moment. And what is really magical about the house, and I'm not romanticizing the house, it is actually magical. They actually let everything be. They didn't plant the garden. They didn't choose what plants to make it look beautiful. They just kept layering and adding plants as it went, and it just grew very wildly. They were saying that because they've let everything be, whether it's the butterflies, the bees, the animals, garden snakes, or anything like that, the environment is so pristine and unaffected by humans. In the night, you actually see fireflies, and that's such like an uncommon, I don't know anyone who has seen fireflies, if not in just like, you know, movies or some pristine natural setting, which is why we called the story Fireflies in the Mango Orchard.
Their home and lifestyle was literally everything that I wanted to give my parents, because they have gotten into gardening quite seriously in the last couple of years, and I wanted them to have that kind of life once they came back to India. And these people were literally living that dream, and it felt magical and unreal to be there and experience all of that they're having over there. So, yeah, so that I think that home is special because it gave both of us a lot of peace and a lot of hope.
Last question. What is the one tip you would give to somebody who's trying to write a book? Don't say don't write one.
That's a good one.
Actually.
I think just get a mentor. If you're doing it for the first time, it just helps to have many conversations. Of course, don't go on this rant of reaching out to everybody on the internet and getting confused. But, you know, getting a mentor, getting someone you can be accountable to, and getting someone who can make this process a little less messy because they've done it before, definitely helps. I'm giving this piece of advice for like people who are writing a book for the first time. Anywhere we were stuck, whether it was PR, whether it was marketing, whether it was writing or photography or design, we reached out to our networks, and then we reached out to people on the internet. These conversations definitely helped us. Basically, don't hesitate to reach out, because you don't know what these conversations are going to do for you.
This is pretty much a startup on its own, if I can say. I would definitely say be prepared for the long haul and persevere through the idea, and be confident about the idea that they're having. Having done this and knowing that this is one of the hardest aspects of seeing a book through, they know they have that level of patience and perseverance. They can fully get into it.
If I was there, I would have given you both a big hug, because this is so inspiring what you guys have done for 2 years. And Vignesh, you rightly said it. It's a startup of its own. Because every little bit was figured out by you. I'm sure there was a whole community that helped out, but the owners were the two of you. And really kudos to you for creating this list. Thank you, Ashna and Vignesh, for taking the time to share your story with me today, especially with Love Madras. And maybe we do a round two if we need to with Renuka, because I would love to get her insights on what she saw you guys as.
Menards Black Friday sale is here. Get everything you need to bring home the holidays. A Nerf Blaster dog toy blasts tennis balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing squish lamps and Performax drill bit sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Hurry in while supplies last. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.